good morning and welcome, welcome to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair and Greg Bach coming to you live from downtown Milwaukee, day four, final day of the Republican National Convention. You can see Fiserv Forum over our shoulders here. Calvin is back at the studio in Waukesha running the board. You can always join us. You can call, you can text 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. All kinds of things coming up on the show today.
Yes.
Dan Schaefer is going to be joining us. He is going to come up here and join us at about 10:33. A little extra dose of Dan.
Recombobulating twice in a week, and one of them live with us here in Milwaukee. Oh, my goodness.
Yep, looking forward to talking to Dan Schaefer. I know he's been out and about quite a bit.
Yes, he has.
Down at the RNC, so we'll see what his insights are so far. 11:33, the Acme Packing Company's Paul Noonan, sports guru, will be here to talk all things sports balls. And then Weather and Wine with Brittany Merlot at 11:50, talk about what is going to be coming up as we start heading towards the weekend. Mm-hmm. It is beautiful out here right now.
Perfect.
Right?
I think right now we're at upper 60s, which is fantastic. I'm wearing myself a short sleeve hoodie, which is great. Better than Monday where I was just
melting,
roasting in the sun here in Milwaukee. But it's been much lovelier the past few days.
Well, if you have an opportunity, get outside, open up the windows, and enjoy this beautiful summer day here in Wisconsin. We're going to start off with a little recap of yesterday's RNC. Big article in today's Milwaukee Journal Sentinel from Mary Spicuzza, Rachel Hale, Hope Carnop, and Laura Schulte. The word you seldom hear during the RNC speeches, abortion.
Mm. Yep.
Never heard of it.
What
we
is that?
We don't want, it's not important.
Maybe they don't want it to be a thing so much if they don't say it, it will no longer exist.
Right.
There it is. I figured it out, everyone. Crack the code.
We're all just going to forget.
Yep. For now. For now, until Election Day. And then look at those websites, look at those speeches, look at the whom they're hanging out with. It's going to change.
In the article, it says, call it the elephant in the convention hall. Not even vice presidential nominee J.D. Vance addressed abortion during his acceptance speech last night, even though he had told CNN in 2022 that he would like abortion to be illegal nationally.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, that's got to be a weird conversation. Be like, you can talk about whatever you want. Do not bring up abortion.
Ever.
But I'm a conservative. Doesn't matter.
Well, and this goes back to, and we're going to talk about this in the 11 o'clock hour, Gail from Utah.
Yes, Gail, one of the delegates for the RNC this year.
Yes, and was in the platform meeting.
Yes.
Which essentially was not so much a platform meeting as it was, here's this document, agree and sign it.
Done. Which is completely against the protocol and everything that happens at every other convention when you talk about it. As far as how to come up with your platform, it's a lot of work. And that's half the reason why they go there, because the process is you get selected. You have to run. You get elected to be a delegate. Then you go paying your own way, hotel, airfare, and you're going to go talk with the people that you want to see and come up with your platform. And that's not what happened to Gail and the people who are used to the old days.
Yeah, well, that was the old process of we're going to have agreements and disagreements, and we will hammer them out, and we'll discuss them and make compromises. Nah, that's those days are over.
Gail, we made it easy for you. It's right here on this one page. You just sign it, and if you even want to go home. We're fine. There are donuts on the way out, so have fun.
The noticeable silence over the issue comes as the Republicans approved their latest party platform, embracing Donald Trump's political positions, including his approach to calling for abortion laws to be left to the states. However, and this is an important caveat, the 2024 platform includes language linking abortion to the 14th Amendment.
Yep.
So this is a way that they can institute a national ban on abortion, is by using the 14th Amendment, that therefore laws or court decisions could give fetuses additional legal rights that may also endanger IVF.
Yeah, I mean, they don't want to give it over to the states completely because they have found out in the past 2 years that this is a wildly unpopular stance in states like Kansas. There's other states that have voted to codify abortion. Kansas is the one. I mean, when you think of red, Kansas comes into the conversation, and Kansas voted to codify abortion. So now they're like, well, we can say it's up to the states. We love our 10th Amendment. It's a great amendment. But let's make sure the back door is open so we can push that that other way through, so we can make sure that it's 100% illegal. And now it's just – my question with IVF, Jane, is when it was starting to become a thing, when people were starting to say, like, we need to – when Alabama banned it, when they went for it
– right.
There was outcry. There was outrage because people say, like, no, this is a way of for people who can't have children to have children. If they outlaw it, there will still be access to IVF for those who are connected, rich, and able to do it without having to explain themselves. So that's my thing is IVF might be illegal, but people will still be able to get it because it's as you say, all for thee, none for me.
Well, right. And unfortunately, back when before Roe was passed, mm-hmm. there were wealthy women who got abortions.
Yeah.
They just left the country.
Well, there were also elected officials in the GOP who took part in abortions and kept it very quiet. So
yeah, definitely. This is very troubling, folks. We're not going to let this disappear because no. That's what they want.
Yeah.
Like you said, they want us to forget.
Yep.
And just assume that everything is going to be just fine. They would never do that. That's absolutely inaccurate.
No. They're waiting in the tall grass on this one. And as soon as it's all done, and if it goes their way, you can see this all happening as part of Project 2025.
Yes,
and we bring it back to that.
And it is listed in Project 2025 mm-hmm. to nationally ban abortion.
Yep.
They want to get rid of the Department of Health and Human Services and call it the Agency of Life or something.
My God, that sounds like 1984 type stuff. The Department of Life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, thank you.
Yeah.
No, thank you.
Molly Jungfest. You know, she is.
Yes.
She's a political commentator and a podcast host. And she did a long piece on Project 2025.
Yeah.
We're going to include that in the show notes.
Okay.
It's about 40 minutes. She talks to a professor who has looked at Project 2025 pretty extensively. And I think he does a really good job of explaining what will happen and how quickly this will happen.
Yeah.
Because last time around, the administration really didn't know what they were doing.
No.
Or how government works.
No.
Or the machinery of government. That's not the case anymore.
Yeah, when Trump came into office, he was trying to do, in 2017 when he was sworn in, he came in, I think, trying to do something that mirrored what had happened before, you know, appointing your cabinet. That by the end of his first term, it was all acting secretaries,
yes.
People he could fire on the spot without congressional interference, and that is what's going to happen this time. It's going to be sycophants and neophytes and people who just bow and scrape at the feet of the former president.
Well, and again, a good example is what happened with the platform meeting.
Oh, yes.
Where essentially yep. There's no discussion on this.
No.
And too bad if you don't really have time to read it because Gail said we didn't even have time to read it.
No,
and then they called for a vote.
And the thing with, and I don't know Gail from anyone, but my guess is Gail is still going to vote for the GOP in 2024.
Oh, yes.
And that she was still excited to be a delegate and all those things. This is not going to turn her away to vote Democratic or liberal. And they knew that. They know that. They know they're going to be like, here you go. This is what we decided. You're going to sign it and you're going to go home or do, I don't really care what you do. And that's it. And they're like, okay. And then they're still going to go to the ballot box in November and punch that ballot for Trump.
Because, again, ultimately, they will institute a national abortion ban.
Yes.
In some way, shape, or form. The far right and the far right Christian nationalists don't like states' rights, at least when it comes to this.
Christian nationalists don't like a lot of things in this country. We're finding out more and more with this week going by, so...
Well, and speaking of, and this is a disturbing article as well, this is in Mother Jones this morning, J.D. Vance, of course, now the VP pick for Donald Trump on the ticket. J.D. Vance is married to an Indian woman.
Yes.
That is not sitting well among the right-wing Christian nationalists. We're going to talk more about this tomorrow.
Yeah.
But Nick Fuentes, who is an avowed racist.
Yeah. Proud.
And a proud racist. Is just appalled by this. And now in Mother Jones, Monday night, Harmeet Dhillon is the National Committee Woman of the RNC for California. So Monday night here at the RNC, she closed it out with a prayer. Dylan is Sikh, so she recited it in Punjabi.
Mm-hmm.
But the universal message, the English translation of one line says, "In your grace and through your benevolence, we experience peace and happiness." That doesn't seem controversial.
No, that sounds like something that could unite people of all faiths. It's just the idea of being good.
No.
No, I guess not. Were people upset, Jane?
Yes.
Oh, boy.
I know. Andrew Torba is the CEO of right-wing social media platform Gab. He ranted to his 400,000 followers on Twitter. Quote, "Last night you saw why Christian nationalism must be exclusively and explicitly Christian. No tolerance for pagan false gods and the synagogue of Satan," unquote. Republican Oklahoma State Senator Dusty Devers, quote, "Christians in the Republican Party nodding silently along to a prayer to a demon god is shameful." Laura Witzke, former producer of some right-wing live stream show, quote, "How about you get deported instead, you pagan blasphemer? God save our president, and God saves our president, and the RNC mocks him with this witchcraft."
Remember, folks, this was a woman who works in the GOP. This is not someone they just found on the street or a liberal they snatched up and put her on the stage. This is someone who is working for their party,
yep,
and most likely voting for this president or for the former president. This is what they had to say about their fellow countrymen.
This is serious, people. This is not a joke.
No. No.
Dan Muschult, a delegate from Canton, Missouri, said he thinks, quote, "If you're not a Christian, then this may not be the place to be."
I mean, on a simple terms, yeah. I mean, it seems like even if you are part and parcel of their party and you are everything they believe in, that one little bit, nope. Not welcome. Not welcome here. Not welcome in this country. I mean, that line from Andrew Torba, "Christian nationalism must be exclusively and explicitly Christian."
Good old days of the Inquisition. Let's bring back forced conversions. 855-752-4842. If you'd like to join the conversation, Tom, I see you on the phone. We will take you when we return. You're listening to Matt Nair on Air, coming to you across the Civic Media Radio Network. Good morning and welcome to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair and Greg Bach coming to you live from downtown Milwaukee. The final day of the Republican National Convention. Calvin is back in the studio in Waukesha. You can always join us. You can call, you can text, same number, 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter, talking about one thing no one wants to talk about at the RNC is abortion. Mm. We can't back away from this, run away from this, delete previous posts about this. Mm-mm. Republicans all over the country are scrubbing their social media websites because nobody wants to talk about their biggest dream, a national abortion ban.
Which is slowly coming closer and closer to a reality, and that could be something that undoes them. I mean, as we said earlier, this is an issue that's been codified in state after state, including Kansas. It's that old adage, like, it's the dog that finally caught its tail, and what's it going to do? And they're going to have to reap. But like we said, this is a tall grass issue. They're waiting. They've made it seem like it doesn't exist. It's not a problem. But as soon as they get some power, if they win in 2024... you bet your sweet bippies they're coming out and they're going to tell you exactly what they believe again. And that is why it's important for you to understand things like this, Project 2025, and get yourself a voting plan for August as well as November, because voting is the way we voice ourselves.
Ballots.
Ballots.
855-752-4842. Tom from L.A. on the line. Good morning, Tom. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, I'd just like to remind everybody, I don't think I'm going to be watching this speech tonight. But put a little thing on your TV that just says liar, because everything Trump says when his lips are moving, he's lying. And he may come across tonight as a more gentle, or I can't imagine, I really can't imagine it. But, you know, he may be like he had a conversion because he got nicked in the ear or something like that. But please, everyone, just remember Project 2025. This is not a joke. And if you care about your, you know, relatives, if you care about your, the women in your life, if you care about the LGBTQ plus people in your life, please, please vote blue, no matter who it is. I just beg you, because this is not a joke.
No, it's not, Tom. It absolutely isn't. Thank you so much. Always appreciate it.
Yeah.
It's not a joke. And I do understand that we try to put lighter spins on things. But this is very, very serious.
Yeah, we take this very seriously. I was speaking with somebody who is a comedian, a trans comedian, and I just said, how are you doing? And she said, well, I'd be happier if they weren't hunting me down. That's how she feels.
Oh, I bet.
And I say that because I get accused of, and we've gotten accused of, being hyperbolic, taking it too far, getting too worried, making a bigger deal out of it. This is not hyperbole.
No.
This is a 900-page document that this group that is being fed millions of dollars to created for us to create a country that they want that doesn't really include someone like me. I don't know about you. But they want to reform this country in a way that fits them and lets them live their lives in their perfect Christian, American, husband making the money, woman staying home, having the babies.
Where she belongs.
Where she belongs. I mean, it's just absolutely ridiculous.
We will continue to talk about Project 2025. We have a number of guests who are going to be joining us from National Security Leaders for America over the next couple of months as we take more in-depth looks at what this will do, and it will fundamentally change how our country works. We don't have a lot of time before we go to the 10:30 news. Dan Schaefer from the Recombobulation Area will be here after we get back from the news. But first, I wanted to take just a couple of minutes to talk about Derek Von Bully.
Yes, the friend of the farmer, the man of the third, Mr. Derek Van Orden.
Derek Van Orden, who never met a woman he didn't want to push around, apparently. He loves yelling at teenagers. In libraries.
Yeah, he's just a guy who really, he loves to dish it out, but certainly cannot take it.
Well, so there was a pro-Palestinian group of protesters who were trying to get into a Republican women's luncheon, and they're standing in line, and apparently Derek Van Orden, 3rd Congressional District, comes up and shoves past her.
Oh, yes.
Shoves past her, and from what I've seen, she said, you know, I was here first.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't going to let him cut in front of me. He immediately claimed she assaulted him.
Yeah, he referred to it as political violence.
He shoves past this woman, and she is not a big person. She's certainly not as tall as you.
No,
She's probably even shorter than me.
I was going to say, from what I understand, she is a very small individual.
So they arrested her.
Yeah.
They arrested her for assaulting big manly man tough guy, Derek Van Bully.
Yeah. I mean, this guy is just...
Now, the charges have been dropped, correct?
They didn't press charges.
They didn't press charges.
They decided not to press charges because I feel like they said, this is ridiculous. We will look like fools. But the thing for me is... We talked about what happened on Saturday, and we made it very clear how we feel. And, you know, civic media, personally, people all around, political violence is not the way to handle anything.
Ever.
And that's also, to me, using that term political violence. To me, political violence has a very, very specific tone to it. And when he uses that term to describe this situation, it's disgusting to me. And it also just shows he is the lightest lightweight snowflake. He can sit there and call Matt Gaetz names. He can yell at kids who are taking pictures and living their lives and being happy. But the moment someone gets in his way, they knocked over my tray of lunch and now I'm sad. Deal with it, dude. She bumped into you. You're a Wisconsinite. Excuse me. You say excuse me and you move on with your life.
Like I said, I don't know. There's never been a woman he doesn't like to kind of push around, seems. Anyway, no charges have been filed, but... And you did mention, so he's taking some shots at Matt Gaetz.
Oh, yeah.
On social media. Matt Gaetz spoke last night at the RNC. A lot of people noticing it seems like he's had a little work done.
And if he hasn't...
Just a scooch. I mean, that's fine. But Derek Van Orden on Twitter, Tubby did not need to be physically held back. He pulled a hold me back bro move to look like a tough guy because he is, in fact, a little bee.
Yeah.
And this was when Gaetz, eternal frat boy, got up in Kevin McCarthy's face.
Yes.
On the floor of the convention.
And it was also being a schoolyard bully, too. Like, it just showed, I mean, I'm not going to sit here and vie for Kevin McCarthy, but Kevin McCarthy was living his life doing an interview. And then here comes Matt Gaetz and his eyebrows and just, like, getting in his face like an eighth grade idiot. And then here comes Derek Van Orden to the rescue.
Tough guy. Tough, tough guy. All right, Dan Schaefer from the Recombobulation Area is coming up. We have news on the way next. Stay close. You're listening to Matt Nair on Air, coming to you across the vast Civic Media Radio Network. Good morning and welcome to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair and Greg Bach coming to you live from downtown Milwaukee, day four, final day of the Republican National Convention. Calvin Beck in Waukesha running the board. You can always join us. You can call. You can text at 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching in the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Normally, he joins us on Fridays, and you will also be joining us tomorrow at your regular time.
That's right.
A special appearance, a double dose of Dan Schaefer from the Recombobulation Area. Thanks so much for coming up and joining us today.
Thanks for having me. This is a great space you've got here.
Isn't it nice?
And it's wonderful to be outside in this beautiful city of Milwaukee.
Weather like this is why we live here.
This is what we think about. Days like today are what we think about in those frigid January days when we're stuck inside.
Absolutely.
Days exactly like this one.
Yep, absolutely. Get out and enjoy it. If you have the chance, open up some windows, get some fresh air. You have spent a lot of time in the inner perimeter, and we're going to get to that in just a minute. We were talking about the Christian nationalism movement, and they're not necessarily happy with J.D. Vance as the vice presidential pick because his wife is Indian. And all three of their children apparently have Indian names, and the far right Christian nationalists are freaking out about this. Jake from Milwaukee texting in that Christian white nationalism is evangelical Christianity, or known as Dominionists. These extreme right winger Christians are antithetical to democratic principles. They are MAGA. They are the Republican Party. And another texter on WAUK, listening on WAUK, I don't understand how, if there is supposed to be a separation of church and state, how we can let a religion dictate the rule of law. But they've been screeching about that for a long time, saying that that was a mistake, that that's not what the founders intended, even though it spells it out pretty clearly.
Yeah, it's that whole First Amendment right up there, right up at the top.
Yeah,
they put it first.
Right, thou shalt not
reason.
Establish a state religion or prohibit someone from worshiping their
Yeah, and you know, so many of the speakers this week have just included messaging like that in their remarks, just like rights don't come from the government, rights come from God, and you know, it's so much of that that we've heard, you know, at the lectern inside Pfizer Forum at the RNC in Milwaukee this week.
They're originalists until it doesn't suit them. They love it when the Supreme Court, you know, interprets that Constitution the way they want because it's originalist. It's an original document. But as soon as we're like, no, times have changed, or that's not what they meant.
Activist judges.
Thank you.
Activist judges.
Right. Yes.
Activist
yes. judges. Exactly. Yeah. And then they've all disappeared now, apparently. Yeah. There right. are no more activist judges.
Nope.
Right,
nope.
right. It's all of a sudden, there's just like this confirmation bias that yeah. underlies so much of Republican policies. It's just like, if it's my way, then it's the way of the Constitution. But if it's not, those are the evil Democrats yeah. trying to destroy the country, you know, yeah. and yeah. it's so much of that. Yeah.
So what have been some of your impressions? Where do you want to start?
Where to start? It's you know, it's been a lot this week. I've been down at the grounds every day. I think Monday and Tuesday was there pretty much the entire day. I've spent, you know, 12, 14-hour days on the grounds and around the area. Yesterday I was spending a little bit of time in and around Milwaukee before going down there. But last night I spent the final 2 hours of the convention on the convention floor. So I experienced the final few speeches of the evening, including J.D. Vance's kind of headliner speech right at the very end. I experienced that right on the convention floor, which a disorienting experience, frankly, but also the spectacle of it, you know, it was pretty remarkable. And just the reception that he got was just interesting to kind of gauge different things happening. You know, one of the things that was happening in a big way, there were a lot of speakers yesterday from the state of Texas, and the Texas delegation really made their presence known at that convention because they were all wearing tan cowboy hats throughout the course of it. And there's like this cover band that plays between speakers.
Yeah.
So it's just like playing kind of like 70s hits
yeah.
or whatever. There was like an REO Speedwagon song going on, and the Texas delegation is waving their hats back and forth to the beat. So just experiencing that just right in the belly of the beast there was pretty remarkable.
It's interesting that you mention Texas because Greg Abbott spoke, right?
Yeah, Greg yeah. Abbott spoke.
And Governor,
there was
Governor
that's
Greg
when
Abbott.
The signs that said mass deportations now were handed mm-hmm. out throughout the convention floor.
Greg
you know, that unity message
yeah.
didn't really carry through
bring us all
the
together.
Rest of the convention, yeah.
Yeah, it's nice that Greg Abbott skedaddled out of Texas while Houston is still, hundreds of thousands of people are still without power in Houston.
Oh, yeah.
After Hurricane Beryl, and Chris Casper,
yep.
one of our engineers, shared a TikTok video with us, and we're going to talk more about this tomorrow. Some of the linemen, and a lot of these people have volunteered to go to Texas to help people get back online.
Yeah.
They're being threatened.
Threatened.
Now.
Shot at.
Shot
beat
at.
Up.
Given water laced with fentanyl.
Given, yes. They're being given water laced with fentanyl.
That's pretty wild.
And that's the state that Greg Abbott runs. What were they?
But I mean, he's
in
Milwaukee now.
Right.
Sure. So it's fine.
Yeah.
We're fine. Yeah. Fine.
I guess at least he didn't go to Cancun. But like Ted Cruz did the last time that they were hundreds of thousands of people without power. But I just thought that was interesting that when he's got this crisis going on, and that's what the second largest city in Texas, Houston.
Yeah.
And it'll all be good. Just try not to kill the people who are trying to help you get your power back.
Yeah.
Yikes. Big yikes.
So who else spoke? Junior spoke.
Yeah, Donald Trump Jr. spoke. And you know, it was. He also brought in his oldest daughter. Also spoke at the convention. His 17-year-old daughter spoke, and I think that was, you know, certainly in light of what happened Saturday, the assassination attempt. Just the fact that happened right before this convention is just obviously hanging over everything
sure.
that's going on, and whether it's security concerns in and around the grounds or just the rallying around Donald Trump that you're seeing among
Republicans. Well, now they're all wearing, aren't they all wearing gauze on their ears?
I think there was, I saw a tweet this morning from people like handing these out now in the Deer District.
I'm surprised they're not
Pfizer
selling
Forum.
Them.
Yeah. Maybe that's part of it
yeah.
too. Maybe that's part of it too. But I think, you know, her speech was talking about, you know, just talking about Donald Trump as being a grandpa and, like, letting her getting away with, like, drinking soda when she's a kid and, like, stuff like that, you know.
Oh,
so I think it is, you know, there's certainly an element of that, of just, like, the family nature.
Humanizing him?
Humanizing him to a certain extent, yes. But you know, and then as soon as Don Jr. gets back at the lectern to give his part of the speech talking about, you know, how the press is horrible and the Democrats are horrible. And so it's just like this little genuine moment of, and I think, you know, just having a 17-year-old greeting a packed arena like that has to be a little stressful. She did pretty well. But I think it was just, this is kind of the dichotomy of what we've seen this week. A lot of these, you know, just kind of like, you know, there will be heartfelt moments, and this is surviving an assassination attempt is a major, major historical event in this country. So there are, like, elements of that and speakers speaking to that, but then it's just like they turn right back around and go right back to the same type of ultra-divisive politics, blaming the media, blaming Democrats. You know, we had the moment on Monday when Ron Johnson addressed the convention.
He gave
the wrong speech. you know, talking about Democrats being a clear and present danger to America. So it's just like this, there's just two tracks of this convention happening. One is the, you know, genuine acknowledgement of this historic moment in American history, but then there's also just like, this is what the party is and has been and is and will continue to be under Trump going forward as well. And so it's just, it's tough to grapple with. I don't know if you'd characterize that as hypocrisy or some sort of contradictory messaging, but it's hard to deny, you know, what's being said.
Well,
and
again,
what's being handed out in these signs saying mass deportations now.
And they weren't they chanting that?
They're chanting send them back.
I think that's the interesting thing is that there was an expectation of a kinder, gentler GOP message. And they were like, we'll give you a little bit of that, but we're going to really not hide what we think at all. And it's interesting to me that Don Jr. brought out his daughter, who gave an elegant speech. I'm sorry, it's hard for me to buy Donald Trump as a grandpa. It just really is. But that notion that it's the poised, well-prepared daughter, and then here comes my dad, unhinged, saying crazy things. It's just the same thing Trump and Ivanka. Ivanka comes out and says wonderful things and sounds very put together. And here comes dad talking about sharks and batteries.
Well, I go back to, does no one print out speeches anymore? No one actually has a handheld script? Come on, Ron Johnson. You come out there and you start reading your own speech and you realize it's the wrong speech. If you had a hard copy of it, you could have read from that.
Or just the recognition in the moment that, like, you know, and this is the thing, like, they, you know, talking about unity, talking about bringing the country together. Well, I think the first speech of the convention was Marjorie Taylor Greene and Ron Johnson.
Perfect.
So I think, you know, it's not exactly...
Marge is so unifying.
Yeah, and so it's just, like, right out the door with it. But I think, you know, from some of the folks that I have talked to in and around the grounds, you know, I did an interview with the head of the Milwaukee County GOP, young man, Hilario DeLeon. Sorry, I'm tripping over my words this morning. And he was talking about looking ahead to this speech and saying, you know, he really was hoping for people to see a side of Trump that they may not be accustomed to, and talking about the unity of the moment and all that. So I think, you know, there's obviously going to be a lot of eyes on this speech tonight in Milwaukee, given, you know, what happened less than a week ago, given all of the attention that is on him right now, given that he is leading in the polls. He's the front runner in the presidential race. And so I think that there's going to be so much attention, and to what extent that unity message actually appears on stage, I think, is what we're all going to be looking for.
I can hear it now. We're all Americans. Let's all come together, even you haters and losers and thugs and vermin. We're all part of this country, you vermin loser pigs.
Yeah, I mean, the number one item on the Republican Party's platform was characterizing immigration as an invasion. You know, that has been some pretty dangerous mm-hmm. rhetoric that we've seen from very extreme fringes of the party. And, you know, Trump has brought that within the fold in the Republican Party. So, you know, is that going to be like, even thinking back to the debate, obviously the story of the debate was Donald Trump. Or was Joe Biden, but Donald Trump steered every question back to, you know, demonizing migrants and talking about the border. Is that going to be the same part of the speech tonight? I think, you know, that's certainly the big question.
I would think that that's a given.
Yeah,
I think he's going to try to present it in a tone that was more like his tone at the debate, which was much more soft. It wasn't. He didn't come off as crazy. I mean, you even told me that when you texted me. He's like, Trump is sounding very sane right now, and I think he's going to try to do it. And he does that thing he always does when he's on the teleprompter. He'll put both hands on the podium, and he'll cock his head to the right or the left, and he'll talk like this, and he'll say, it's like this, and he'll sound magnanimous and presidential because that's what happens when he needs to turn it on. And I think he's going to turn it on tonight.
It will be very interesting.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm expecting anything, honestly. If the crowd gets so crazy, he might just be like, yeah, you're right.
Well, we also just got a list of who some of the speakers are going to be for the evening. And I think they said Hulk Hogan going to be introducing the former president for his speech. So and there were a couple other just like pro wrestling. I think Linda McMahon was on the roster.
Yep.
Dana White from the UFC. So I think there is going to be like this kind of, you know, WWE Raw element to what's going on at the convention. But I think it also just goes to show how, you know, to whatever extent this message is super divisive for a broader audience, for the wider group of Americans who are going to be voting in this election, Republicans are very united around Donald Trump.
Yeah. Absolutely.
For sure. And it's like, you know, to whatever extent that there were frictions within the party, Never Trumpers, whatever, that is gone now. That is gone.
Yep.
Dan Schaefer is here from the Recombobulation area. When we return, J.D. Vance gave his speech last night. We'll hear what the vice presidential hopeful had to say. Stay close. You're listening to Matt Nair on air, coming to you across the Civic Media Radio Network. Good morning and welcome to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, Dan Schaefer from the Recombobulation area, coming to you live from downtown Milwaukee. Day four, the final day of the Republican National Convention. You can see Fiserv Forum over our shoulders. Calvin is back in the studio in Waukesha running the board at 855-752-4842. You can also leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and or Twitter. We were just talking about the delegation from Texas in their matching hats at the RNC yesterday. Jake from Madison texting in, fun fact, the GOP group from Texas isn't staying in Milwaukee. They're in downtown Madison. I saw them walking around the farmer's market yesterday and then boarding their buses. Lynn from Oconomowoc. Hey, I'm still waiting for Trump's 2016 pivot to being more presidential.
We're still waiting for his healthcare plan.
Yeah, that too. And the infrastructure week.
Yes.
It's the overpromise, underdeliver. That's been the MAGA movement. But on the point on the Texas delegation, I actually had an interesting run-in with one of the delegates on Monday night. So as we were leaving Fiserv Forum, I was trying to find my bus to take back because, you know, everybody's going everywhere. It's chaotic. Yeah. It was raining on that night, so it was just hard to find where to go. And as I was trying to find my bus to get back to my house on the west side of Milwaukee, I ran into a member of the Texas delegation who was doing the same, trying to find a bus, because instead of staying in Madison, he's just like, I'm not doing that. He's doing it right. He drove up in an RV, parked at State Fair Park, and took the bus down to the convention grounds, and was like, yeah, they're spending the whole day in Madison before coming down. I'm going to stay here in the city. I'm going to do my own thing. And the bus has been great. So it was, you know, it was kind of a really enjoyable conversation that I had with this member of the Texas delegation.
Did they know that he broke free from the herd? I would think that that would be concerning to them. You want to keep them all together and make sure everyone's behaving.
He seemed like a little bit of a maverick there, so I appreciated
boy.
That.
Oh.
All right.
Yeehaw.
J.D. Vance. I read, from what I'm reading this morning, it was a really boring speech.
Yeah, it was not, you know, the electrifying orator type of speech that Mr. Vance was giving. And I think, you know, he's making his introduction to the country in a lot of ways, like to whatever extent he's well known within political circles and from the book that he wrote and whatnot. You know, there's probably a very wide audience who is tuning in to see J.D. Vance for the first time. So I think, you know, part of the speech was speaking to, you know, his own personal biography. I feel like those were the moments of his speech that resonated the most in the room. You know, his mother was there, and she was, of course, a focus of the book that he wrote.
Right.
She had struggled with addiction. She's been clean now for, I think he said, the last 10 years.
That's excellent.
So there was, you know, some genuine family moments there when he was talking about his upbringing and all of that. But, you know, I think one of the big pieces of his speech, and I think it speaks to how Trump has remade the Republican Party over the last 8 years, if not in practice, if in rhetoric, in those speeches, in the messaging of, you know, he was critical of free trade agreements signed in the 90s under Bill Clinton, and he was criticizing, you know, the Iraq War and things like that. And I think that just goes to show how different of a voice he is within the modern day Republican Party compared to, you know, kind of the free market, spread democracy
around
the world.
He's much more isolationist.
Of the Bush era. Yeah, there's like talking these protectionist policies and talking about how NAFTA, you know, ripped these communities apart and we want to bring factories back to the Midwest. And, you know, Jane, we talked about this, I think it was last week on the show.
Yep.
You know, this report that was out there talking about how many of these kind of like, quote unquote, left behind counties and communities across the country struggled mightily during the Trump years and have seen levels of success Biden.
Yep.
That I think have gone unheralded. So I think it's just like where the rhetoric meets the reality of this type of thing. But I do think in the messaging, I think it's smart messaging because they know they have to win, you know, one of the three blue wall states, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, or Michigan, if they want to win this election. And speaking to those, you know, I think what used to be referred to as those economic anxiety types of concerns around the Midwest, I think that was a successful strategy for Trump in 2016. I feel like he kind of got away from that in 2020, especially after 4 years of not really advancing policies that really did what he was speaking to. But now that he's been, you know, out of the White House for 4 years and can kind of return to that more populist style messaging, I think there is a potential for that to have some effect. But I think, you know, we saw what happened. That's the difference this time around, is that, you know, we saw projects like Foxconn. We saw projects in Ohio, you know, large factories closed during the Trump years in Ohio.
Auto closures.
Exactly. Yeah. And so I think when J.D. Vance is on there on stage talking about we're going to bring factories back to Pennsylvania and Ohio and, you know, rural counties and things like that, we have the evidence that this didn't happen during Trump's presidency. So I think that is part of the challenge. And I think back to, you know, one of the other highlight speeches from the week that really stood out to me on Monday night, the president of the Teamsters, Sean O'Brien gave, I think, the longest speech of the night. And as he's on stage talking about things like, we need paid family leave for workers. We need to have better benefits. We need to, you know, take on big business. And I'm sitting there like, okay, this doesn't sound all that bad, but it's just like what the problem again, and I'll keep repeating it, is just like we saw what happened for 4 years under Trump. These promises did not come to fruition. He promised to be a different type of Republican that would bring in unions, whatever, but he governed like Mitch McConnell. And so I just think that's where the divide is in this rhetoric versus the reality.
Well, and if you look at Project 2025, trust me, they are not going to be friends of unions. They're not going to be friends of they want to roll back child labor laws. Let's get those kids back in the coal mines, you guys. Come on.
And the massive corporate tax breaks are one of the top policies there. It's just like, where does that fit with this type of messaging? It doesn't.
Some of the numbers that I've seen kicked around under the changes that they want to make to the tax policy, if you're a family of four making $100,000, you can expect your taxes to go up about $1,500.
Right.
We're going to talk more about that in the coming weeks. Stay with us. News is coming up next. Dan Schaefer staying with us for another segment. I hope you'll stick around. You're listening to Matt Nair on Air, coming to you across the Civic Media Radio Network.